Theme song. Theme song.
Can we have a campaign where Dez is some sort of goblin king? Because that was incredible.
And welcome to the
it
Dice
last
Geeks, everybody.
Half a session before my voice would just give out.
Sure. I hear that, yeah.
I can do a passable Mr. Hyde voice, but it both sounds and feels like whiskey flowing over broken glass.
I mean,
so yeah, in moderation.
Yeah, a perfect voice for the occasion, but not something you want to do very often, perhaps.
Right.
It is, in the immortal words of Cookie Monster, a sometimes voice.
Sure. H is for Hyde. That's good enough for you.
That actually gives me a pretty good opening onto, I think, what is what's the word I'm looking for here? Emblematic kind of low for me in that it is very mild for this because, you know, there wasn't really a lot of low to sift through for it. It just, as I predicted, man, my character voice was kind of all over the place. I'm sure it was mostly fine.
You weren't the only one.
But fair enough. You know, that was a thing I was worried about that did come true. Again, I don't think it was that big a deal, but, you know, did stick out in my mind, especially given the particularly consistency of Drew's Yvain voice was pretty great.
Which was incredible.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you.
She was creepy as fuck. Would not want to meet her in a dark alley.
She was like, I played all the From Software games, so obviously that vibe was in there, but it was like, if like, who's Elizabeth II's younger sister who never had to do anything in her entire life? Margaret? It's like if she existed in the Dark Souls universe, someone who like understands that the path she's been set on is pointless and is like, okay, it's a party.
Right.
That was sort of the idea. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Magnificent. I think Milo was similarly sort of procedural in that I definitely hosed us on the, like, following the order of the turns and everything toward the end there, between giving a description and a provenance at the same time, and also then just going a little bit with agreement, so thanks, folks, out of order, sort of an extra turn-ish. So, yes.
Yeah,
I did turns wrong, and everyone else declared it fine.
I can add on that onto that low, because like I think there is a, you know, the system has it built in that things get a little bit looser as it goes, because it's aware that there's a tension between the turn based nature of the thing and the round robin thing, mm-hmm. and like conversations, mm-hmm. which naturally are a little bit messier than that, and ping pong mm-hmm. a little bit. So I think my low is when I occasionally I couldn't tell whether I was being ungenerous to my fellow players in terms of mechanics or storytelling by jumping in or not jumping in. That felt kind of awkward. I think it worked out fine. I think there were maybe only one or two mm-hmm. moments where it was like, mm-hmm. you know, ping-ponging topics didn't feel totally natural or whatever. But yeah, like if I have a low, it's that I was definitely stressing about that in my head. I kept actually thinking, like, would this be a good way to dip a toe into role play for, because it's rules light, mm-hmm. right? And we're always talking about how that's a really good thing to be able to jump into. But it would also be absolutely terrifying to play this with people you hadn't done tabletop with before.
Yeah.
This is definitely a game built on experience and trust.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Because it's pure yes and it's anything GM-less, I think, really requires experience and trust.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and something that you can't really prepare for in advance in order to get rid of that kind of anxiety, because
totally,
the majority of what you're saying in-game has to be made up on the spot, because you don't know what somebody else has brought to the table.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
You could make yourself a little world Bible, I guess, but that would almost do more harm than good, because the whole point is just, again, pure yes ending, right? Mm-hmm. Just going with
right. The moment anyone introduces any other location or nation or force or whatever that doesn't match with your world Bible, like, well,
Yeah, exactly.
Eat this out the
window.
That's
my high, by the way, is like, I feel like we did an amazing job of interweaving this like relatively fleshed out fantasy world with interwoven like regions and cultures and
by the way, acting. I betrayed the apparently like strong negative force in this world.
right.
I'm rather pleased at that.
It's great. Yeah.
Well, and Drew, get out of my head. That is my high as well. It's just, you know,
my actual high is stepping into Nick and dreaming his dreams.
Yeah.
That was extremely good.
Yeah. I loved how, you as fellow players, wove things together. It's something that, you know, really made the whole thing stick together in a way that I was, you know, as my low kind of struggling with at times, you know, because I was so busy sometimes trying to think of where I might fit into a story or what I might contribute that I was missing what the person was currently talking about. And I think that's what the designer had intended the moments of silence for, in the kind of crackling of fire, like, hey, let's slow things down so that you can listen and then respond, not listen and try to think about how you might respond in the future.
It's, yeah, you're right. It's an Olympic level challenge in not just thinking of a clever thing and waiting for your chance to say it. You really have to be interactive. Like, yeah.
Well, and if we get the chance, you know, and there's no guarantee that we will, but I've crossed my fingers. If we get the chance to revisit this in person, literally sitting around a fire where everybody can see everybody else's markers and stuff, not only would it be cool, I think it would be easier to kind of keep a little bit of track of what, you know, was a little confusing this time. Like, I think it would take some of the mental burden off, to Nick's point. I think, honestly, this went really good and I had a lot of fun. I guess listeners will know if it's good radio, but as play, you know, it was very enjoyable. But I can imagine the character of it becoming smoother and more relaxed, you know, if there was that sort of additional layer of, I guess, kind of LARPing light, right? Of sitting around a fire with a little marker and, like, you know, a notebook or one of those like easel boards, you know, like the paper flips or over the back or whatever, as a sort of in-person social experience. I think it would take some of the mental overhead, you know, out of the equation in a way that might prove helpful. So the good news is that this is a system that our decision of who was leaving the fire and who was staying could inform a subsequent play session of this, you know, where we would start off by figuring out, you know, who, what has happened to those who left the fire. There's like a table for that. And then who shows up back at the fire. And, since Gent stayed there, he would still be there, but could only introduce like one new item, you know, because you haven't gone adventuring, you know, in the meantime. So it sort of change your contribution. This is neither a high nor a low, but while I'm thinking about, you know, going out into the darkened lands between sessions, one of the things that I noted here is that I think on two occasions we sort of conjured places that could be like in the quote unquote darkened lands of the game, and everything else was like on our journey to this, you know, isolated sort of ultimate destination where you never really leave, which is not exactly what the rules describe, but I think worked really well, especially for first foray here. Perhaps if we did another
one. We had a lot of sort of the places we each started, and then there was the north and Coriand, or however it ended up getting spelled. Exactly.
I wrote it down how I thought I would be spelled in my head, so we didn't forget that it existed.
Oh, of course. No, like, and then the like six stops on the way to your kingdom, which was brilliant. I loved that description. But
well, thank you. I loved the idea too that you had been close, but how would you know to keep going? Like, yeah,
right.
Yeah,
it's the roots of the world right there. Mm-hmm. There's you a can't beach, go any lower. There's an ocean.
That is a reference to Dark Souls right. 1, by the way, where there is the roots of a giant tree and a beach, and that is, in fact, the bottom of the world. So, yeah, the prompt was, what if you kept going?
I know that this is very well known, and maybe may well be known to any and all of our patrons, but just in case anybody ever listens to this that has not played Dark Souls 1 or watched the videos about this, to be clear, the area that that was a reference to is you go to the bottom of the poisoned swamp and you wade through the poison in the opposite direction of where the plot is until you come to the very last of the very big trees. And you go up a little ramp on the route and there's a little alcove with a treasure chest with nothing special in it. But if you go to the wall behind that treasure chest and you whack it with your weapon, it disappears, and there's another alcove with a different treasure chest with a more valuable treasure in it. And then if you think to go behind that treasure chest and whack that wall, it disappears, leading you into the hollow interior of this giant tree that you've been among the roots of, where you must then descend, I don't know, 100 stories through the like rotten middle of this tree, fighting off creatures that can petrify you until you get to the mushrooms at the bottom, where you have to fight mushroom men who look harmless, but to quote Noah Caldwell-Gervais, can pummel you to death in seconds. And then after you get past them, you find yourself at the Great Ash Lake, where you have this thin beach of ash, and you look out over the water, placid and still, and see the great arch trees of the time before time. You get attacked by a hydra. And at the very end of the beach, there is one of the immortal dragons who are supposed to be extinct, who is indifferent
just chilling,
to whether
unkillable.
Or not you attack him.
Yeah.
Like it is.
That was a gorgeous description. And yes, the punchline is it's well hidden.
Yeah, it's very well hidden. And there's not a lot that's critical to do there. Right. It's just there for
like. Is
this
the place that you
advice.
Have to go to start turning into a dragon?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That is what the dragon at the end of the beach.
That is the full extent of what I know about.
Is if you can join a covenant that is PvP based, and you can use the rewards you get from doing that covenant stuff to buy, in quotation marks, gear that allows you to dragon up, as it were.
You can challenge enough people to bar fights that you can become a dragon, basically. Yeah, and the other thing that takes place
down
there is
aspect. Hate the FromSoft aspect.
Sure.
Because that is fair enough. Extremely not my jam, but I would possibly pay good fake money to see someone else do
for
this
sure.
thing.
Fair enough. And yeah, the other thing that takes place down there is the end of the saddest subplot in the game, which you would think just didn't have an ending if you didn't find this incredibly well-hidden place. So
well,
anyway,
or
that's
even
that's
if you found it, yeah. You can very, very easily, extremely easily not get it to that end. There are like two other points at which it can end in a way that seems conclusive and inevitable if you don't follow the exact steps without necessarily knowing them ahead of time to have it end all the way down there at Ash Lake. It is the most obscure possible.
That is the most FromSoft sentence that I have heard.
Yeah. No, I love these games, but they're, you know, the NPC quest lines are a special kind of insanity. Yeah. Like the way you can just lose the thread very easily.
Mm. And the reference in my character was the sword. Mm-hmm. Is functionally the executioner's sword from the Book of the New Sun.
Mm.
In the books, the fluid is mercury.
Mm. Ooh.
Cool. So, very hefty, very momentum.
right. I lost the plot. I don't remember. I know we've given some highs and some lows, but
Nick and I had a shared high.
Right. Okay.
I gave my low.
You sure did.
Thank you guys for being more on top of it than me.
I've done my low, but I think my high is the fact that we all appear independently to have painted ourselves as at a minimum not good people.
Right.
And probably all of us traitors in technical fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I think, an interesting sort of group choice that we all engaged in.
Yeah, nobody was in exile for unjust reasons. Everybody was, at the very least, they may have been rebelling against something unjust, certainly in your case, Des. But they, you know, everyone made a decision with eyes open. Nobody was a victim.
But I went about it in the most destructive way, yes.
right, exactly.
As the stinger revealed.
Right, yeah. I mean, one of the things that I really appreciate about the game and the vibe that was established right from the get-go in our particular session is... you know, that it seems like it's not a world where it invites a character where I'm a good person and good things have happened to me.
right.
So one of those things is usually untrue. Either I'm not a good person and good things have happened to me, or I'm not a good person and bad things have happened to me, or any other permutation. But
right, yeah.
I think that, like, that aspect of this kind of world is part of what makes it, like, I don't know, there's something appealing about the end of the world, right? Because you don't have to worry about the end of the world anymore, because it's already happening. Mm-hmm. But it's also, like, it makes those little moments of humor or those numinous little moments of joy, like, really stick out, mm-hmm. you know, like points of light in the dark in a way that I find really interesting and effective with, at least with, you know, with players who are vibing with it.
Mm-hmm. This does kind of make me want to, like, have a subsequent character who shows up without ears.
Shit.
And who will have at that point led an otherwise preternaturally charmed life.
Uh-huh. You know, things are going so well.
No. After that point.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, no, I got kicked out of the order and like, yeah, no, the world's so much nicer outside. I don't know what it is.
It's pretty chill out here. Yeah.
You know, one...
like, people ask me about my ears a lot, and, like, that's awkward. But once we get over that, you know, people are pretty chill.
Mm-hmm. Nick, what did you have?
Yeah, I was going to say that one thing that I do find myself, you know, through the play this evening kind of wishing for is... maybe a bit more of just kind of getting to know each other as people, which isn't a complaint about today's session. It's more kind of one of the boons. It's like I could see perhaps beginning another system with this one. It's like, okay, so instead of you meet at a bar, you meet, you know, kind of crouched around a fire. Having lived some before you got here, and, you know, this is the way that you gradually get to know each other, and the connections that actually do exist between you, despite being from very different lands, you know, it seems like perhaps an origin story as well as the opposite of all of that.
I think the way that I would suggest using this game is functionally as... a world building session zero. Mm-hmm. That is to say, you have to include names of places in the items and sort of start pegging out relative geographies of things.
Sure.
And from there, you can give rise to a world. Mm-hmm. Granted, it's mostly going to be crap sack.
Well, yes.
But, like, there are systems for which that is appropriate.
Yeah, you don't build a chivalric fantasy world by having a conversation around the world's saddest campfire. But I think it was mentioned.
I mean, you could.
Sure.
I'm sure it would be a fascinating take on chivalric fantasy worlds.
And
still more realistic than George R. R. Martin.
I think it was said during the session, I don't know if it was in the parts that make it air or not, but that this is also a really good engine for just generating, like, kind of artifacts, you know, for various other uses, too.
Magic items of varying levels of cursedness.
Right, yeah. though I'm sure that curse is going to be fairly constant thing there. I enjoyed this a lot. I was kind of surprised myself by being the primary one taking notes, but I think that actually leads into the thing that's going to end up being my high here, which I feel weird about because it's something that, that doesn't really, it's not the session itself or anything that my fellow players did, though that was all honestly really enjoyable. And I had a grand time. This system, I think because of its difference in sort of register from a lot of the other one-shot stuff that we've done, wonderful as that has been, really just kind of grabbed me today as I was preparing, and I like wrote up a whole character with a bunch of like items that I had when I left my, you know, sort of a place of origin, and the items that I could describe to like, you know, put in the game. And I hunted up a gif of a campfire to share with everybody so that we could stare into the fire together, you know, as required. And I went and found royalty-free campfire sounds to use in Zencastr as we were recording, and like made everybody come in, you know, to the campfire gift first, and had the sounds playing as people were coming in, and did like a little Dark Souls greeting for everybody. Like, it just really kind of did grab me in a way that a lot of the time when we're doing one shots, it's because at a relative last minute, something has, you know, prevented us from doing a more regular session. And, you know, it's a little bit more fly by night. And this certainly we had some learning to do, but it was just kind of an all around enthusiastic experience for me, I guess.
Yeah, no, it was extremely good.
Yeah, for sure. And I totally agree. Like, I agree that the vibes were immaculate. It was really good. This was a really good group for it. It would have been amazing if Robin could have been here, and we should totally revisit it. I do hereby pledge that should we all get to be around a fire in any context, I will bring two good microphones and some windscreens, and we will get a stereo recording of us actually doing this around a fire. But no, this was amazing. I had never, like, for those who haven't played these games, like this is a cheeky thing about them and how they hide a lot of character and lore stuff in item descriptions. So, like, you know, you pilfer people's stuff a lot. So if you pay attention to their stuff, you learn stuff about them. And that's a very, like, kind of, you know, dark, bleak way of doing it, because the people you're learning about are dead almost always by definition. Yeah. So the idea of getting to, like, move the timeline up on that and taught you, like, use that to reveal character, but to not just say monologue about yourself, you have to attach it to an object, is like a very fun abstraction. So I totally agree with Des that it would be a great object generator. I'll call out one other indie system. There's this thing, Ezra's Guide to Magic or Otherwise Significant Objects by Ezra Zanton, that is explicitly about making objects, you know, just for fun or for other campaigns, but it's a 1-2 player thing. This is a really good way to expand it. I think we had the perfect number, but you know,
yeah, no, this is a very good number.
Especially for doing it remotely, I think this is a really good number.
Totally.
You could definitely do more people more easily if you were physically present.
In person, of course.
Des?
No, it seems like a sort of interesting chill party game at that point.
Mm-hmm. You with the right group for sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, I think my favorite bit that I did on someone else's item was the Prism of Poison.
Mm-hmm. That was really clever, yeah.
Really good. Really good. Yeah, that flask ended up having some I like that. I loved
the flask was wild.
The back half was mostly just people comparing weapons, and I love that the claws went mostly unacknowledged. Right, that was a really nice touch.
I'm so curious about those claws, but also I didn't want to ask.
Well, and it's great to leave some details for later.
Uh-huh. The jar with the moss in it. What's going on with the fucking jar with the moss?
Yeah.
For that matter, the lightning jar. Yeah, anyway, this is all stuff we can
do. Do you mean the blood jar?
Yes, the blood lightning jar. Exactly, yes.
And there's smoke.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, indeed. Smoke is very much a smoke motif with your character.
Yes.
Which I like. A smotif, if you will.
A bit of a smotif.
I won't, but you're welcome to.
I respect your integrity. I don't share it, but I respect it.
Oh, man.
This was a blast.
I think that did get highs and lows from everybody, but yeah, this was a really fun little change of pace. I hope our listeners enjoyed it. And this is one that I could see us, as I've said a few times, returning to because it has that kind of continuation from any configuration yeah. mechanic in it. And we've got the like Google Jamboard just full of stuff that we can come back to kind of whenever we want as well. So maybe we'll see this one again down the line. Or
I love that.
Maybe we'll see some that. Of these yeah. items in another game. Probably not Hardwired Island, but you know,
the
flask could be in Hardwired Island.
Maybe
we'll that's see, true.
Yeah. It's made of light.
That's true. It is. It is kind of cyberpunk, yeah. And it is absolutely terrifying.
Well, if there are any kind of last thoughts or comments, this is a great time for it. Otherwise, I think we can maybe wind down.
I'll just reiterate that I have a vivid picture. Like I'm literally thinking about mic placement for when we can do this around a real fire. So look forward to our first field episode, dear listener, if we can make it happen.
Hell yeah. Yes,
please. That'd be wonderful.
Well, in that case, we thank you for Patreonizing us. You know, it makes a really big difference. I'm keeping my ear to the ground on when the sort of started out as an expansion and kind of became a whole sort of sibling game to Flying Circus. Chariots of Steel is kind of getting finalized, you know, in the near future from when we're recording this. So I'm probably gonna, you know, be able to use some Patreon dollars to get digital and hardcover copies of that.
Nice. Hell yeah.
Which I'm super looking forward to, meaning that when we do get to that campaign, we can have, you know, ace pilots as well as tank crews, if we want to. So, you know, that could be fun, but, you know, that's something that we do, you know, directly supported by the people who are hearing this. So we really appreciate it. We appreciate you tuning in to all of these goofy and not so goofy little one-offs. And we hope that you've enjoyed listening to the episodes and the peaks. And, you know, we are so glad to have you here.
We truly appreciate you. Thank you a ton for listening and for supporting us. And if I may make one more Dark Souls reference, thanks to you, lowly times these aren't.
Thanks for listening, folks, and particularly for supporting our gaming habit.
Thank you for enabling.
Yes, indeed. Because patronizing is bad. Patreonizing is good. It's very good. Thank you. Here we are.
I hate being patronized, but I love being patronized.
I sure do. Oh, it's wonderful. I feel the love.
And we love you back. We hope it's a wonderful whatever time it is when you're hearing this. And until next time, ta-ta.
Be well.
One more for the road.
Nice.
My nightmares needed that. Thank you.
Since I'm sharing them, it's only fair.
Nice weeks.